here we go. So let's talk about Balaram's Rasa dance first. Because Balaram's Rasa dance, actually there's two words. No, I'm taking my Bible. There's two words, there's Rasa and Rasa. You should all understand, they're not interchangeable. The word Rasa is a type of dance, and Rasa means a taste or a mellow. Sometimes devotees think that the word Rasa, with a short A, means relationship, but it doesn't. It means the taste that one gets out of a relationship, rather than the relationship itself. So you have like five different tastes in the spiritual world, and the tastes like the Shanta, coming from Shanta Ras, the Shanta taste, it means peaceful relationship, or worshipping God, non-reverence, and then you have Dasha, worshipping God as a servitude, and then you have Sakya, worshipping God as a friend, and then you have Vatsalya, worshipping God as his parent, and finally Madhurya, worshipping God as a conjugal relationship. And there's a specific taste, and that taste manifests itself as bhavas. Bhavas means different emotions. And of course, the first bhava is called a vibhava. That means that which stimulates the other bhavas. I'll give you an idea what that means. Let's say if you see a peacock feather, that's a vibhava. It's called udipana. There's two types of vibhavas, alambana and udipana. I mean, it goes into more detail than that. Alambana means Krishna directly. If you see Krishna directly, that stimulates you, like makes you ecstatic. And then if you see a peacock feather, that reminds you of Krishna, right? So that's udipana. So just like the story of that devotee, Mukunda, he was talking to the Muslim king or Muslim Nawab Hussein Shah, and he was advising him in medical matters, and then he saw the Muslim guy being fanned with a peacock feather, and then he fell down from the dais or the upraised platform because he just remembered Krishna. And so what he experienced was another type of bhava, which is called Vyabhachari bhava, which means there's different emotions. Vyabhachari bhava means an intermittent emotion that you don't really have control over. And sometimes we experience that in the material world because the bhavas in this material world are called bhava rog. That means disease emotions, like, you know, Cupid's emotions. That's disease. Because it's called lust. Lust is a disease. It's not something you want. It's an anartha. It's something you don't want. So therefore, anyway, so that's what bhava. There's Vyabhachari bhava. There's Ashtaka bhava, the eightfold bhavas, you know, the typical ones, and there's different categories of emotions that are described by Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur and the other acharyas. So anyway, so let's get back to the whole story of Balaram. So a rasa dance is a type of dance, you know, with many different performers, and in which rasas are experienced, or emotions are experienced. So here's Balaram's rasa dance. So Balaram was staying in Dwarka, with Krishna and everyone else, and he became anxious to see the residents of Vrindavan. And also, Krishna wanted to send a message to the residents of Vrindavan that he was coming soon, but he didn't come soon. And also, he sent a message with Uddhava that he was coming soon, and he didn't come soon. So the residents of Vrindavan didn't trust Krishna after a while. Didn't trust his promises. So Krishna said to Balaram, you can carry two messages basically for me. That I'm not going right now because the Yadus will not let me go. Because Krishna's a member of the Yadu dynasty and Krishna was like in charge. So he said the Yadu dynasty, the members of the Yadu dynasty will not let me go. And the second reason is given in the Brihad Bhagavatamrita that if I go, it will cause more pain to the residents of Vrindavan because they're going to be thinking I'm going to leave in any minute. you know, once you've experienced a trauma, then what happens? Then anything that reminds you of that trauma becomes even more traumatic. It's like when people go to war and they hear the sound of the guns going off and everything like that, and they, just like in Iraq or Afghanistan or any of these countries, or Vietnam in the old days, then they become traumatized by the sound of a gun or even the noise like that, like if you slam the closet door, then they'll just like start shaking. And I had an experience of that in Fiji, that I got bit by a dog. So then every time I heard the dogs bark after that, ruff, I picked up a stick and, you know, got ready to beat a dog. So that's called PTSD, which is called post-traumatic stress disorder. Oh, whoop. Kamcha. Pajama Sunuche. So that's called post-traumatic stress disorder. So Krishna was very concerned that the gopis and the residents of Vrindavan would be experiencing this post-traumatic stress disorder. They would be thinking, he's here, but he's going to leave again. Because they loved him so much that, as we know from Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, that a moment's separation was like 12 years or more. Actually, Prabhupada translates it as 12 years and more, but the actual word is yugaitam, like a whole yuga. Like a lifetime of Lord Brahma, basically, or a yuga cycle of 4,300,000 years. So it was even more than 12 years. So therefore, Krishna said, I'm not going back. So Balaram went back to carry the message. And when he went back, he met Nanda and Yashoda first. And he actually sat on Yashoda Mai's lap. And Yashoda Mai was crying like that, and asked how the relatives were doing and whether Krishna actually remembers us. But that's a symptom of love. That's another bhava, you know. Like, in other words, one just like says something that's not even logical. Obviously, Krishna remembers his mother and father. So, and the gopis asked whether Krishna was happy with the ladies in Dwarka and in Mathura, and whether he has actually forgotten us because he has all these sophisticated ladies to deal with there. Of course, the ladies in Dwarka and Mathura were actually expansions of the gopis. That's explained by Rupa Goswami in the Vidugdha Madhava, which is actually a very important work. In the Vidugdha Madhava, he explains how Rukmini is expansion of Chandravali, and then you have Satyabhama's expansion of Radharani. So when Krishna first married Rukmini, he gave her a promise that he wouldn't marry anyone else without her permission. So when Satyabhama came on the scene, he had to sneak around with her. So even in Dwarka, Krishna had like this, let's say, extramarital experience. Even Dwarka, because he was sneaking around with her in this place called Nava Vrindavan, which is translated literally as New Vrindavan, but not the New Vrindavan that's in the United States, obviously. Vishwakarma had constructed a replica of Vrindavan, and then Krishna was meeting with Satyabhama, who was Radharani. And it's interesting how he was meeting with her, how he first met her in Nava Vrindavan. There was a deity of Krishna in Nava Vrindavan, and Satyabhama saw that deity. And she didn't know that the king of Dwarka was the same as her Krishna. She just thought, you know, I don't want to go near that guy, because she thought, you know, he's a king. So she didn't know that. So what happened is that she saw a deity of Krishna in this Nava Vrindavan forest, and she began to decorate that deity of Krishna, you know, worshiping the deity of Krishna. And then she heard Krishna coming, but she thought it was just the king of Dwarka. She didn't know it was the same person. So she went and hid. And then Krishna saw the deity of himself decorated so nicely, and he was thinking, who has done such a nice job? And he thought, I want to find out. So he put the deity in the bushes, and he assumed the same posture as the deity. And then Satchabhama, who was Radharani, came out and started decorating the deity again. And basically, the deity started speaking, who was Krishna. And Satchabhama was speaking. And basically, Krishna thought that Satchabhama, who was Radharani, was a creation of Vishvakarma, you know. So he was thinking, Vishvakarma has done a really good job this time. And Radharani, who was Satchabhama, was thinking, Vishvakarma has done a really good job. So they're both relating to each other as deities. You know, Krishna thought Radharani was a deity, and Radharani thought Krishna was a deity. Finally, they discovered the real person. And then, basically, after that point, they had to hide out, and Krishna had to lie to Rukmini to be able to associate with Satchabhama. Like, he told her he was going to see some demigods, but instead he ended there. And then Satchabhama caught him, and what she did is that she was going to send, Rukmini caught him. And Rukmini was going to send Satchabhama away some far distant place because she was really upset with the whole thing her husband was doing. And then Satchabhama decided to commit suicide. And so she entered into the Kaliya Lake, the imitation Kaliya Lake. There weren't real serpents in it. It was imitation. And she jumped in to commit suicide. Krishna, the hero, jumped in to save her. And then Rukmini accepted after that point. And the whole thing involved also the Shaimantaka jewel. Because the Shaimantaka jewel was actually stolen by Shankarachuda from Kuvera. And then Shankarachuda, he tried to kidnap Radharani in the Vrindavan pastimes. And then Krishna killed Shankarachuda, took away the jewel, gave it to Balaram. Balaram gave it to Radharani. And when Radharani became Satchabhama, it's a complicated story. Radharani had to, when Krishna left Vrindavan, she decided to jump into the Jamuna, and she went up to the sun planet, and then the sun god got the Shaimantaka jewel. You following so far? And then the sun god gave it to Satyajit. And Satyajit was, in one sense, the father of Satchabhama, because Satchabhama was also given by the sun god to Satyajit as his daughter. A little complicated. And then Satyajit gave Satchabhama to Krishna. Later on, Satyajit was killed because of some political intrigue and because of the Shaimantaka jewel. So anyway, so that's an interesting story of how Krishna relates, even in Dwarka, with the expansions of the gopis, like Satchabhama and Rukmini, and also Jambavati. Let's go back to Balaram Vrasa dance. We got started on another story. So the gopis asked Krishna, Balaram, whether Krishna still remembered them. And they said, we gave up everything for him. That's a real guilt trip. You know, the parents sometimes say that to a kid, you know. We gave up everything for you, and look what you did. You joined the Hare Krishna movement. You know, mother will say, I gave birth to you. I carried you for 9 months. I had that happen to me. You know, my mother said that. Carried you for 9 months. I sent you to the university. I worked hard to pay you all your expenses. I cooked for you. And you ruined it all by joining the Hare Krishna movement. So the gopis said also, we gave up everything, and he abandoned us. You know, he just like went at 16 years of age. He left his girlfriends, and after they had renounced basically their happy household lives, you know, then can you imagine that? In Vedic society, I mean, in the West, that wouldn't be considered so heavy. If someone has a paramour, you know, in the West, it's just like, yeah, that's life, you know. Everybody should have a paramour. But in polite society, it's considered very bad for a woman not to be chaste. In fact, there's so many stories in the Vedic literatures about chaste ladies, how they become very powerful. They can stop the rising of the sun. Or like that Savitri in Satyavan, they can actually argue with Yamaraj and convince Yamaraj to give their husband back his life. So there's so many stories. And they actually criticize Krishna a little bit out of their intense love and anger. That's mana, you know, there's anger. They said, we can't believe it that the city women believe him and trust him. And they said, basically, he tricks them because he has this smile on his face. And the smile on his face actually bewilders the ladies. Which is true. I mean, Krishna plays the flute and he smiles and they forget about everything he did before. And he's a real trickster. So then the gopi said, let's talk about something else. Let's not talk about Krishna anymore. Let's forget about that whole topic. You know, it's too painful. But they weren't able to do so. And then Balaram began to tell stories to the gopis about Krishna. And he actually tried to preach to them. He preached to them, you know, Krishna is the supreme personality of Godhead. You know, just think of him and then everything will be all right. And that didn't help with the gopis. He tried to console them. Like, consolation means, don't worry, everything will be all right. Krishna will eventually come back. And then Balaram had a rasa dance with his own group of gopis. Srila Prabhupada explained that Balaram has his own gopis. He didn't dance with Krishna's gopis. And he danced by the Yamuna at the place called Ramghat. And some of you have gone to Vrindavan and have gone to this Ramghat. And he started to get a little intoxicated. Because in the spiritual world, Hare Krishna. So in the spiritual world, basically, there's everything we have here, even intoxication. I was reading the other day how Krishna and the gopis would dance and they would drink this honey wine and their eyes would roll. You know, have you ever seen anyone intoxicated? Their eyes would roll. And so Balaram, he began to drink this Varuni beverage. It was sent by Varuna. And he and the girls got drunk. It's amazing how everything is there in the spiritual world. You know, even like people, I wouldn't say illicit life, but, you know, ladies running around with someone who's not their husband. Of course, Krishna, just to explain ontologically, Krishna is everyone's husband. It's not like if you are thinking that someone is your belongs to you as your wife, that is the illusion. Because actually she belongs to Krishna. And your husband belongs to Krishna too. But generally in this world we have this sense of possession of someone else. Like people say romantically, I'm yours and you're mine or something like that. You ever hear that before? In Bollywood films they say that sometimes. I'm yours, you're mine, to the end of time. It doesn't work out like that. But anyway, so there's this sense of, unfortunate sense of possession, but actually everyone is Krishna's. Nirvana moha jita sanga dosha avyatma nitya avinivritta kama. That nothing is ours, and even our janmaishwarya shudashu shibir, all these things that we're very attached to, our good birth and opulence or beauty or learning, they actually belong to Krishna. And Krishna can give and Krishna can take away. So we actually own nothing, not even this body. The body belongs to Krishna. The heart belongs to Krishna. The soul belongs to Krishna. So you can't own anything. Anyway, so in other words, Krishna didn't dance with other people's wives because they were all his. And the other people were an illusion, like Abhimanyu. I mean, that's a pastime, but Abhimanyu was an illusion that Radharani was his wife, but he never even went near her. So that was nice. So he and the girls got drunk, and the Gandharvas, they began to sing, came down from the heavenly planets, began to sing, and Balaram played like a male elephant with the she-elephants in the Jamuna River. His eyes rolled, it's described. These are stories in the Krishna book and Bhagavatam 10th canto. And then he called the Jamuna River. He called the Jamuna to come near, and she said, basically, you were drunk. I'm not going to listen to you. Nowadays, of course, there's no more Jamuna River. Did you know that? Except for above Delhi. It's blocked by all these dams. And what you have in Vrindavan right now is Delhi sewerage. I don't know if you knew this. We're working with this very nice group that's headed up by Ramesh Baba in Varshana, to try to get this situation cleared up. But actually, all the water has been diverted, mainly for industry, not even for agriculture, mainly for, you know, industry like the Coca-Cola company and everything like that. And these industrial, these big companies are actually destroying the ecology, not only of India, but actually the whole world, and destroying your health, too. You know, with Coca-Cola, just talk about Coca-Cola. If you put a nail in Coca-Cola, probably in 3 days the nail will be gone. Did you know that? And the police use Coca-Cola to clean up blood from accident scenes. Yeah, and if you have trouble with your engine, like in your engine, your car, you want to clean it, you just pour some Coca-Cola syrup on it. It'll be cleaned very quickly. Don't put it in your computer. So these industries are actually destroying people. So there's no Jamuna water there. And so people should be aware of that and try to fight for this, the opening of the dam, so there'll be Jamuna water again. Anyway, that's another issue. So Balaram, he called for the Jamuna. The Jamuna refused to come. And he basically got very angry. He said, "Oh, sinful one." And he began to drag the Jamuna with his plow and created many rivulets, that means strong, the small rivers there. And the Jamuna eventually apologized, and Balaram pictured the Jamuna with the gopis and played in the Jamuna after that point. And he came out and he dressed in blue garments, and it's described that all nights passed, many nights he spent there, but it passed like one night. And of course, that's the Purnima. The moon is full right now. So it's a very auspicious time. Also, when the moon is full, people have psychological problems, too. That's why they're called lunatics. Did you ever hear that word before? Yeah. Luna, it means moon. It's actually from the Latin. Lunatic. They're affected by the moon. And anyone who works in a mental hospital will see that many more people are admitted during this time of the month. And anyone who works in a Hare Krishna temple will have to deal with a lot more problems with the devotees in the temple. And I've experienced that too. Okay. If you're Krishna conscious, it doesn't affect you. We were talking about this the other day in regard to Vastu. You know, people ask me the question, what about Vastu? Should we be concerned with Vastu? And my reply was, as much as you are Krishna conscious, then you don't have to be concerned with it. But if you're not 100% Krishna conscious, these things may affect you. So, therefore, we should utilize Vastu whenever possible. However, Vastu doesn't apply in Vrindavan or in Mayapur, because these are transcendental abodes. But it does apply in this in the realm here, like in New Zealand and other places in the material world. And also the question is about astrology. Does astrology apply? And for those who are Krishna conscious and chanting, we know even by the Namavash chanting, all the karma becomes eradicated. Even the Prarabdha karma becomes eradicated. So I can give an example showing you how astrology doesn't apply. And you all know Kalasambha, of course. He's here. And his wife passed away in the same accident that Srila Gurudev had in the car. You know about that, right? So Kalasambha told me that previously, his wife was about 40 years old, but previously, he and his wife had gotten their horoscope done many, many places, like about 20 different horoscopes and Thomas and everything like that. And everyone said his wife was going to live to 80 years of age. And she lived at 40. So why? There's the Krishna factor. You understand? So therefore, we don't take astrology very seriously if we're devotees. I mean, it can indicate certain things, but I've seen devotees use the excuse, you know, this is my Saturn period, you know, the Sani period. They say, you know, they say, I can't chant my rounds right now. And, you know, as far as waking up early and being Krishna conscious, this is my Saturn period. Wait, another 3 years, I'll become a good devotee. And this is my Saturn period. And then also, you know, if I tell a devotee, I see you're going to have spiritual trouble for the next 3 years, you know, there's Saturn and Jupiter is in the wrong place. So you really won't have a good relationship with your guru for the next 3 years. And so it's the power of suggestion. And people think, I'm not going to have a good relationship with my guru. So the guru comes in and says, how are you doing? Ha! You understand? Because that's what my horoscope says. 3 years from now, I'll follow you, Gurudev, but not right now. So Prabhupada really didn't want us to get into astrology. And actually, Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, he renounced his affinity for astrology because he had written a commentary on the Surya Siddhanta before he took sannyas. When he took sannyas, he renounced the whole thing. So it can be used for marriages, you know. But I've seen sometimes when you have an astrological compatibility study and it comes up like 99%, you think, wow, this is made in heaven. But then it becomes like hell later on for some reason. And then the opposite, you know, you have like 2% compatibility and people get married. I said, wow, that's the best marriage I've ever seen. So, you know, it's up to Krishna. Plus, there's very few expert astrologers nowadays. People just pick up a computer program and think they can tell anything. Like that. I have one friend in Fiji, he has a computer program. He's in Lotoka. And he makes money. And it's a good way of making money. Because everyone likes to hear about themselves, right? I mean, if I tell you someone else's horoscope, it's not interesting. But if I say, Ramanuj, I see in the stars that next year you're going to get a lot of money, then he becomes very, very happy. So, everyone wants, you know, people ask, how long am I going to live? And then also this palmistry thing. Like we were at the Uddhava temple in Govardhan, and the Pujari is a good friend. He's an expert palmist. And so he just read one girl's palm, Inga's palm. And I told you that whole story. And then everybody else was lined up for 2 hours to get their palm read. Even me, you know. And then he read my palm and he said, oh, so much money. I said, where is it? So we really don't get into it that much. You know, we can use it sometimes for arranging marriages a little bit, but basically Krishna consciousness is much more important. Anyway, okay, so that's the story of Balaram Jarasa dance, and then we'll go to Shyamananda's appearance day, which we're celebrating today. So Shyamananda means the bliss of Radha. You understand? The bliss of Radha. So here's the story of Shyamananda, who is a very important acharya in our disciplic succession, you know, second generation from Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, first generation, of course, of the six Goswamis of Vrindavan, and then there was Shyamananda. Shyamananda and Narada Tamadas, Thakur and Srinivas Acharya. There's the three stalwarts. And they were the first ones to distribute, to actually do book distribution when they went to Bengal from Vrindavan, bringing the books of the Goswamis. So the story of Shyamananda is as follows. First, he was called Duki. And the reason he's called Duki is because the brothers and sisters that his parents had before him, they all died. And he had all the signs of a Mahapurusha. The sign of a Mahapurusha means that certain proportions of the body are, you know, let's say certain ratios, different proportions, like your arms are long enough to reach your knees, and your eyes are like lotus petals. Sometimes you see the cows, they have eyes like that. Very, very beautiful. Like lotus petals that go like, not quite all the way to the ears, that would be kind of weird. But, you know, can you imagine the eyes go all the way to the ears, up to the side. But they're shaped like lotuses that appear to go to the ears. And certain parts of the body are short, certain parts of the body are long. That's described. So that's called the Mahapurush. And his father, when he was very young, asked him, who is your spiritual master? And he replied immediately, Hridaya Chaitanya. And so this Hridaya Chaitanya is a very interesting personality too, because he's the disciple of Gauridas Pandit. And Hridaya Chaitanya previously used to be called Hridayananda by his spiritual master, which means blissful heart. And then he became known as the one who has Chaitanya in the heart. And there's a whole story behind that. The story behind that was that he was with his spiritual master, Hridaya Chaitanya, of course he was Hridayananda then, and he was taking care of these Gorna-type deities that were made exactly like, exactly looking like Lord Chaitanya and Lord Nityananda, because Lord Nityananda and Lord Chaitanya had posed for the sculptor to make those deities, Nimbo deities. So what happened is he was taking care of the deities for his guru, and then his guru, Gauridas Pandit, had to go somewhere. And when his guru went somewhere, his guru said, you take care of the deities. And then it came time for Gaur Purnima. So what happened is he started to organize a whole Gaur Purnima festival, thinking his guru would be very pleased. He even sent out invitations. And when his guru came back, his guru got very angry and said, why have you done this without my permission? He said, get out of here. But the deities were so attached to him that they left with him. And his guru didn't know that until he went. It was time for greeting the deities in the morning. You know, they were going to play the Govinda prayers. And, you know, the ringing the bell, the curtains open, and the deities were gone. The altar was bare. And so he went to the bank of the Ganges because he knew the deities had left. And this Gauridas Pandit, he was carrying a stick because he was angry at Lord Chaitanya and Lord Nityananda, and also angry at his disciple. And so when Lord Chaitanya and Lord Nityananda saw him, the deities saw him, they jumped into the heart of Hridayananda, and therefore Hridayananda became Hriday Chaitanya. So you do have some history of gurus getting angry in this particular branch of the Sampradaya, which I'll talk about a little later. So what happened is that we have this Duki who went to his guru, Hriday Chaitanya, and he took initiation, of course, from Hriday Chaitanya, and he was sent by Hriday Chaitanya to Vrindavan to study with Srila Jiva Goswami, the most erudite of all the Goswami, actually the most erudite scholar of all time. If you ask people at different universities in India, you know, who's the best scholar of all time, that's Jiva Goswami. Jiva Goswami composed the Shatsandarbhas and other literatures, elaborately detailing the aspects of Sambandha Videya Prayojana, our whole Siddhanta. Jiva Goswami is actually written on. So anyway, so he studied with Jiva Goswami, and he was given the duty in Vrindavan to clean this kunja called the Kanaka Kunja every day. So this is very important. When you go to serve the spiritual master, you have to be given some humble service to do. Like, even when Krishna went to serve his guru, he was actually going out and fetching firewood for his guru, and one time he got stuck in the woods. You know that story. It's there in the Krishna book. So his very humble servant, Samitpani, and his spiritual master blessed him, and then also Krishna, at the end of the instruction of his spiritual master, 64 days was enough for him. He studied all the arts and learned everything in 64 days. Then he asked his spiritual master what dakshin he could give a spiritual master. And do you know what that dakshin was? Anyone know that story? He brought his son back. And so that was a nice story. So therefore you have Hriday Chaitanya, Duki Krishnadas cleaning the Kanaka Kunja. And this is the place where many Radha Krishna pastimes occurred. One day, Radharani in the evening was dancing there with Krishna, and she left her ankle bow, or the nupura, there under a desire tree. And the next day, Duki Krishnadas found this ankle bell. It was glowing, and he fell unconscious. And at first he tied it around his neck, but then he buried it with a shovel. And when he buried it with a shovel, the shovel touched it, and the shovel became gold just by touching this ankle bell. Soon after that, Lalita Devi was sent by Radharani to retrieve this ankle bell, and she went to Duki Krishnadas and said, have you seen anything like this? You know, and he said, who are you? And she said, I'm just a village girl in some village. My friend was dancing here. And he said, that's not true. I understand this is Radharani's anklet or ankle bell, and you're bluffing. You're lying. And Lita said, yes, I was lying. And therefore, you can ask for a benediction or a boon. And Dukhi Krishna said, the boon I want is to see your actual form, to see your form as Lalita. So she was actually in disguise at that particular point. She said, it's not possible. And then he said, but by your mercy, anything is possible. So she showed her the form. And then he requested another boon. He said, I want to be an eternal servant of Radha and Krishna and your servant too. Then Lalita Devi gave him a mantra to see Radha and Krishna at any time and be able to enter into their pastimes. Anytime he chanted this mantra, he would go into trance and enter into Radha and Krishna's pastimes. So then he gave her back the ankle bell. He dug up the ankle bell with a spade, the golden spade. And Lalita at that time touched Shyamananda's head with the anklet or the ankle bell, and it formed the tilak, the Shyamananda tilak that people have seen in Vrindavan. It has a dot in the middle like that, this reddish dot in the middle. And she said, your name now is Shyamananda, but don't tell anyone. The only person I give you permission to tell is Srila Jiva Goswami. So he basically cried and fainted and returned to Srila Jiva Goswami, and he also had a different complexion. His complexion turned golden, like molten gold. And Jiva Goswami said, what's happened to you? You know, your complexion has changed, and you have this strange tilak on. And Shyamananda answered, basically, it's by your mercy, Jiva Goswami. And then he explained the whole thing to him, and he showed Jiva Goswami the spade, the golden spade, the golden shovel. And Jiva Goswami at that point said, I have become your property. But you should explain to everyone that it is by the mercy of Hridaya Chaitanya, or else we're all going to get in trouble. Because people are going to think that I, Jiva Goswami, reinitiated you. Prabhupada actually stated, because we're dealing sometimes with this in ISKCON, how someone from outside of ISKCON will reinitiate someone. Prabhupada said, when one of his disciples got reinitiated by his godbrother Bon Maharaj, this is his name before was Hrishikeshananda, he got reinitiated. Prabhupada said, this is the greatest offense. No Vaishnava will ever accept this. Prabhupada was very, very heavy about this reinitiation business. Anyway, and this Hrishikeshananda later on came back to Prabhupada. You know, first he went with Bon Maharaj. Bon Maharaj, and I don't want to criticize Bon Maharaj, but he's Prabhupada's godbrother. And Prabhupada had sent Hrishikeshananda to Bon Maharaj for instruction, but Bon Maharaj took advantage of that situation. He hid Prabhupada's letters. Prabhupada was writing letters to Hrishikeshananda, and he wouldn't give them to Hrishikeshananda. And basically, he just manipulated the whole situation so Hrishikeshananda would agree to take initiation from him again. So we see this sometimes happening with the politics between different moths, Gaudiya moths sometimes. So, therefore, Dukhi Krishnadas, who was Shyamananda at that time, went around saying, it's by the mercy of my spiritual master, Hridaya Chaitanya. But the Brajavasis became very disturbed by this. They thought Jiva has reinitiated him, and they conveyed the news to Hridaya Chaitanya. And Hridaya Chaitanya got very angry, and he sent a whole group of devotees to investigate the situation to Braj and to actually bind him up. But Jiva Goswami explained the situation nicely, that the tilak and the name was given by Hridaya Chaitanya to Shyamananda in the night in a dream. And when Hridaya Chaitanya heard this, he said, there's no such dream like that. I don't remember this dream. You know, like devotees sometimes have dreams and their guru tells them something. And later on the guru says, that's nonsense, you know, I never told you that. So you shouldn't take dreams so seriously unless you can corroborate it and verify it with the spiritual master. You know, so we have so many dreams, and mainly these dreams, even when the spiritual master appears, mainly these dreams are just like figments of our imagination. Because we have imperfect senses, we make mistakes, we have a tendency to cheat, like that, and we become illusioned or bewildered, the four tendencies of the conditioned soul. So anyway, Hridaya Chaitanya said, dreams should not be taken seriously. And then he went with the great devotees, called Mahantas, means great devotees, to Braj. And he inquired from Shyamananda, who is your guru? And Shyamananda said, you are, and the name and the tilak have come about by your mercy. Hridaya Chaitanya said, we're going to wipe it off, and if it remains, then we know it's real. But if it stays off, you're a cheater. And Deva Goswami's a cheater too. So what happened is that Shyamananda chanted this mantra that was given to him by Lalita Devi, and he entered into the pastimes internally of Radha and Krishna, and he began to cry in this pastime outside of Radharani's abode. And his name, of course, in the spiritual realm was called Kanaka Manjari. You know what I'm saying? Kanaka Manjari, that's his name in the spiritual world. So the gopis came out and they saw Kanaka Manjari crying because he assumed the female form as Siddhadeva. And when they came out, they asked her, what's happened? And Kanaka Manjari said, my husband has beaten me. You know, referring to spiritual master. Of course, the spiritual master is not the literal husband of the disciple, but the relationship of chastity is supposed to be very similar, because that's explained in the fourth canto, part four, by Srila Prabhupada, in the Paranjana story, that dedication and chastity. So Lalita was inside making some betel nuts for Radharani to chew, and she gave the message to Radharani, and they brought Kanaka Manjari inside to see Radharani. So all this was happening internally in the meditation. And so Radha was eating this the betel nuts, and Rupa Goswami was massaging the legs of Srimati Radharani, and Champakalata was fanning Srimati Radharani, and they explained the story to Srimati Radharani, and Radharani said to Subal, who was incidentally Gauridas Pandit, the grand spiritual master of Shyamananda or Duki Krishna, need to see. So you got, it's a very interesting scenario, because you got the grand spiritual master of the guru who's angry at his disciple. And it just gets really complicated. So he explained to Subal, she told Subal, do something about it. Subal painted Shyamananda on the chest of Kanaka Manjari and Tilak on the forehead. And Radharani ordered him, after all this problem is done, you should go tour Orissa with your disciple Rasik Murari, which he did later on. So in the meantime, everyone was looking at Shyamananda, because Shyamananda was completely unconscious to the material world, you know, just completely absorbed in his internal meditation. But Jivananda Goswami understood what was happening, and Shyamananda came back to external consciousness, explained that Subal has given him his mercy, and then Hridaya Chaitanya tried to rub the tilak off, and it kept reappearing. And Radha Chaitanya was really frustrated at that point, you know, like that. Yeah. What's happening? And he wasn't completely satisfied. He thought maybe this is some, like, tantric thing happening. You know, he wasn't completely convinced. So a few days later, he became angry with his disciple again. And he said, you're not in the same bhava as me, you know, bhava. Because he was, Hridaya Chaitanya and Subal, who is Gauridas Pandit, were actually in the Sakya Ras, the friendship Ras with Krishna, not the Madhurya Ras. So he said, you're very unchaste. And Shyamananda preached to his guru at that time. He said, look, something I said last night too, that everyone is assisting in Radha and Krishna conjugal loving affairs of Vrindavan, and even the coward boys, and especially you have someone like Madhu Mangal, who is doing all sorts of interesting things to help with Radha and Krishna conjugal loving affairs. And he explained to his spiritual master, Hridaya Chaitanya, that even your guru is serving like that. And that really caused Hridaya Chaitanya to get angry. So Hridaya Chaitanya took a stick and began to beat his disciple. And his disciple humbly accepted it. Like, if your guru does that, you're supposed to accept it. I mean, that wouldn't be bad, being beaten up. I mean, if Prabhupada beat me up, I mean, it's like the story of Shivananda Sen being kicked by Lord Nityananda in the Chaitanya Charitamrita. Shivananda Sen was in ecstasy. So that night, Lord Chaitanya appeared in a dream before Hridaya Chaitanya, and he was all bloody. And Hridaya Chaitanya asked him, who has done this to you? And Lord Chaitanya replied, "You did it. You beat up my great devotee." And so Lord Chaitanya basically forgave Hridaya Chaitanya and said he should do 12 festivals as a repentance. And then, very interesting story, and then Jiva Goswami, after this holding occurred, ordered Shyamananda to go to Bengal and then later to Orissa, where he met Rasikananda, and they preached all over Orissa. So he's a famous acharya in Orissa. His samadhi is at the Shirochora Gopinath Temple in Ramuna. Anyone here ever been to Shirochora Gopinath?
Yes.
You have. That's good. So in the Shirochora Gopinath Temple, that's the deity who stole the sweet rice from Madhavendra Puri. And so his samadhi is there, and also Madhavendra Puri's samadhi is there, around the corner from the temple. It's a very, very nice thing. So that's the story of Shyamananda. And finally, we'll just tell the story of Vamsi Vadana Thakur. Mm. He took birth in 1466. And he's also known as Vamsi Das or Vamsi. Hmm. And this is some biographical things. Hmm. It says, when Lord Chaitanya left Jagannath Puri and came to Bengal to visit the Ganges, and his mother, after 5 years as sannyasi, stayed for 7 days at the house of Madhava Das. And he observed many of the Lord's pastimes. He took birth in the house of Madhava Das. His mother's name was Srimati Chandra Kala Devi. He's considered the avatar of Krishna's flute, Vamsi. That's why he's called Vamsi Vadana. Hmm. Let's see, what other information do we have here? After Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu took sannyas, Vamsi Vadana Thakur was the servant of Vishnupriya Devi, who was Lord Chaitanya's wife, before he takes sannyas. And he became the foremost recipient of her mercy. After the disappearance of Vishnupriya, he took the Mahaprabhu deity that she worshipped. Remember, she would worship the deities and chant her rounds, and she would just eat like one grain of rice for each Hare Krishna at the end of the day. Mm. Then he established the deity, the worship of this deity, in the present city of Navadvip. You can actually see that deity if you go to Navadvip today. And he also established a deity of Krishna known as Pranabalava. He had two sons named Chaitanya Das and Nitai Das. Those are nice names, Chaitanya and Nitai. And his he was also a poet and composer of songs. It's described his songs are especially sweet and express the deep mood of devotion and separation. And a famous song, he expressed the separation felt by Mother Sachi upon the sannyas of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And he also composed many songs about Krishna's dana lila, that means the pastimes, of tax pastimes, Nokavilas and Vanavihara lila, that means the pastimes in the forest, Vanavihara lila. So that's Vamsi Vadana Thakur. So any questions about anything I said in class today? Any questions or comments or arguments? Yes? Vaishnavi. Take reinitiation? Well, there are, according to Narahari Chakravarti Thakur, that if the guru is, let's say, irretrievably fallen, then initiation should, one should take the mantra again, yeah. I mean, it's not, we don't make it obligatory within ISKCON, but you know, if there's such a situation, it's a good idea to hear the mantra again from a bona fide Vaishnava. And as far as, you know, gurus or people who had the position of gurus deviating, that's something that's happened throughout history. You know, it's not something unique to ISKCON. Someone shouldn't think that, you know, just ISKCON, it's a phenomenon in ISKCON, but it's happened. That's why Narahari Chakravarti wrote about it, because it's something that did occur even during the time of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And But otherwise, but let's say the scenario where, you know, somehow or other your guru is aggravating you because he's, anyway, you don't like his instructions for some reason. That's not good. But let's say the relationship is not so good. So you can accept a Shiksha guru, but never should you take reinitiation unless the guru becomes non-devotee, materialistic non-devotee. You know, there's some serious type of thing. At that point, then reinitiation is recommended. So that's what you're talking about? But otherwise, I mean, you know, say you don't like the way your guru chants, then get permission from the guru to accept a Shiksha guru. And in ISKCON, we, you know, we have so many Shiksha gurus. There's no problem with that. And in many cases, the Shiksha guru may be more prominent than the Diksha guru, because Shiksha is more important than Diksha in any case. So sometimes reinitiation is there. But however, one shouldn't take reinitiation just because you're being offered some, let's say, higher rus, higher taste. I mean, sometimes people do that. They say, oh, your guru is only a neophyte, your guru is only on the Madhyama platform. And the reason you're not experiencing Krishna Prema is because you're a guru. People say that sometimes. But that's not true. The reason... Twist that one. Twist it. Good. The reason we're not experiencing Krishna Prema is because we're not chanting purely. I mean, if we're connected to Srila Prabhupada through a bona fide representative of Srila Prabhupada, then we have all the potential and the potency to reach the highest stage. It's not that someone has to go around like switching gurus to advance more in Krishna consciousness. If you do that, then you're committing an offense and you will advance less in Krishna consciousness. Because it's an offense of the person giving in reinitiation and it's offense of the person who's taking reinitiation. So both will suffer because of that. It's a very serious thing. Of course, if Radharani or her associates give you initiation, that's permitted. Like in the case of Shyamananda. I mean, I don't think there's any problem with that particular procedure. You understand? Like Radharani comes and says, your name is, you know, something, Ananda or something like that. You know, I wouldn't mind that. Right? Your name is Prashadananda. Because the ISKCON gurus, they're just like a used car, the used car lot, you know, or something like that. You know, why should you buy a Yugo? You know what a Yugo is? As a car from Yugoslavia that doesn't work. Let's take a Western car. Why should you buy a Hyundai when you can buy a Honda? You know, Hyundai is like an imitation of Honda. Did you know that? That's why they have the H, but twisted a little bit different so they won't get sued by the Honda company. You know, because they trademark the H, you know, the Honda H. So then he goes, Hyundai, pronounce it a little differently.
It's a twisted
Honda. Yeah, it's a twisted Honda. You've heard of that? You've heard of Hyundai?
Yes.
You have those cars here?
Oh, yeah.
And you have Hondas here, too. So it's for those people who can't afford a Honda, you buy a Hyundai. And so, you know, so once you get more money, you should buy a Honda. So I actually have a Honda. I would never buy a Honda. Anyway, so they make this propaganda that, you know, you got, you know, ISKCON gurus, and who knows what they were before they were, you know, before they joined the movement, like, you know, me, I looked like such a Sai Baba before I joined the movement. I thought I was God, you know, whatever. So they make this propaganda, you should... But right now, of course, Narayan Maharshi has left this world, and he's a great Vaishnava, I'm not going to criticize him. But right now, basically, what they have are you know, the second generation devotees. And but it's like competition. People are always saying, you know, our computer is better than anyone else's computer. So you want to sell, you know, you want to sell your PC and get a Mac, you know. What is the latest Mac that's most popular? The Air or something? Or?
Yeah,
MacBook Air. So you know, everyone's looking at the MacBook Air and thinking, oh, that would be much better than my PC. Maybe it is better. But but the thing is, within ISKCON, you're connected to Prabhupada. And that's not to criticize any other guru, but you're connected to Prabhupada. And what's the problem? You know, your gurus in ISKCON come with a warranty. Not just a 90-day warranty, but, you know, lifetime, eternal warranty. You're connected with Prabhupada. So, otherwise, you should be careful who you accept as spiritual master. Obviously, it's not that I'm connected with Prabhupada, therefore anybody can be my guru or my initiating guru. One should examine if the guru has the qualities. Samit Pandi Srotriyam Brahmanishtam. In other words, he's a servant of his spiritual master, Samit Pani, Shrochiyam, he has heard nicely and repeating nicely the words of his spiritual master. Brahmanishtam, he doesn't fall down. You know, what is he doing? You know, fall down means throughout the whole day, what is he doing? Engaged in Krishna service. At least we should see if someone, we can ascertain to see if someone's on the platform of Nishta. Now, you can't basically see any higher than that. You know, you can't tell if someone's on Prema. Because if you ask the guru, are you on Prema? If he's on Prema, he'll say, no, I'm just a rascal. And if he's a rascal, he'll say, yes, I'm on Prema. Or if the guru starts exhibiting symptoms of bhava, you know it's probably a problem. He has some problem there. Either mental problems or some pretender. Like we find a guru, like during RT, rolling on the ground, foaming at the mouth. Don't accept him as a guru. Because that's problematic. So, anyway, at least you can see nishtha is something that's observable. You understand? Nishtha means steadiness in sadhana and steadiness throughout the rest of the day, too. You know, vachu vegam, manasa krodha vegam, jiva vegam, udara pashta vegam. So, but, you know, accepting a guru, or somehow or other, let's say if one accepts a guru and his instructions are not really adequate and you need some more instructions insofar as the high, not instructions as far as your computer instructions. You know, like Dwarkadish is an ideal computer guru. Or even Maruti is actually more elevated than that. So you can take computer initiation from him. Or you can even have a martial arts guru, right? Like a kung fu or ninja guru. They have ninja here? Yeah, and our... In Serbia, we have one of the most expert devotees teaches ninja. And he makes devotees like that. Like he, not by, you know, surrendering Krishna. Not, I think you misunderstand me. It's like bridge preaching, you know, like the yoga thing they have here. You know, loft preaching. It's something like that. He has people come in, and then he has them become vegetarians. If you want to take a ninja course, then you have to be vegetarians. You have to eat prasadam, and you have to chant. So, one time there were some dacoits attacking the temple in Belgrade, which is the capital of Serbia. And they were trying to siphon gas from the car or something like that. And he was on the second floor. And so he jumped, you know, ninja people can do that. So he jumped from the second floor, like in the movies, you know. Who's that, Jackie Chan or something like that? You seen those movies? So he jumped from there and they got, the Superman, you know, superpower or something like that. And they ran away, the dacoits ran away. So you can have a ninja guru or a computer guru, like Dwarkadish, she's advertising for that. And, but let's say you find, like, spiritually your guru doesn't know. Let's say you're advancing so quickly and you want to find out, you know, basically how to do Raghunuga Sadhana. And your guru is still on the Vaidhi platform. So then you take permission from the guru to go approach someone. Of course, you don't say, Gurudev, you're only on the Baidu platform, and I'm more advanced than you. You say, you know, I would like, can I hear and take instruction from such and such within Prabhupada's movement? That's really important, too, because we're all part of the same family. So you don't take permission, oh, can I go to Radhakund, to the Babaji's? I mean, we've lost many devotees to the Babaji's, not just other Gaudiya moth groups, but the Babaji's. And in fact, there was a lot of problems when the Sanskrit school was situated in Govardhan, because Govardhan's very close to Radhakund. So what happened is the Sanskrit devotees, they became very expert in Sanskrit, and they thought they knew more than their teacher and knew more than Prabhupada. And then they would go to Radhakund and associate with the Babaji's. And the Babaji's basically convinced them, you know, give up your affinity with Prabhupada. And many of the Babaji's, they criticize Srila Prabhupada. And in fact, they criticize Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur. They have this whole philosophy that he never took initiation from Guru Kishore Das Babaji Maharaj, and he's not really connected. And this is called the anti-party. That's the technical name. Anti-party. They're anti. And one of their acharyas was Lee Prasad Thakur, who was the brother of Bhakti Vinod Thakur. So they make a lot of propaganda. They say that actually the connection is through Vipini Vihari Goswami with Bhakti Vinod Thakur rather than Jagannath Das Babaji Maharaj. And so they allure devotees, and you'll find a lot of ex-ISKCON devotees there at Radhakund, thinking that they're experiencing some higher taste, having renounced Srila Prabhupada's association. So if one thinks that they're experiencing a higher taste, renouncing Srila Prabhupada's association, that so-called higher taste is an illusion. I mean, many things make us happy, but because we make mistakes, we can't distinguish between matter and spirit. I mean, I gave the example the other day that, you know, getting a new computer makes us happy, right? Or watching a football game or a soccer game makes us happy. And we may confuse that with spiritual happiness. And we may get addicted. I mean, even I have devotees who chant their japa watching Bollywood movies in Fiji. They watch the news, Hare Krishna. Or in the middle, I gave that example, in the middle of the night, I hear screaming and yelling in the ashram, thinking everybody's experiencing babas, but then I later on find out they're watching the Fiji Sevens games or something that was occurring in the UK, because, you know, 12 hours difference, so, you know, midnight, they're screaming, Jai, Hari Bol. There's something about watching sporting games, or actually watching romantic things. There's this thing called vicarious enjoyment. That's a fancy word. That means, vicarious enjoyment means you're actually experiencing it as if you were the person. And if you look at someone watching a football game, you'll see that they actually do the same thing that the players do, basically. Get him! Get him! You ever see that? And so in other words, they're experiencing the same sort of emotions. Babas. That's a baba also. Baba means emotion. Baba rog. Sick emotion. They're experiencing the same emotions that the people on the screen are manifesting, the people in the game are manifesting. So that's illusory. They're thinking this is happiness, and they're equating it with chanting Hare Krishna in the temple. That's happiness. You know, dancing in kirtans, and at the night I go to the karaoke club. You have karaoke here? I'm sure you have it here. I mean, Fiji, they have it. We have one temple president who goes to the karaoke club at night in Fiji. And he looks like Amit Bachchan, right? Amit Bachchan. I think you know who I'm talking about. So, but we think they're the same, because we are an illusion, and we make mistakes. We can't distinguish. So the point is that people can go and sit down and braj and just chant and think they're in ecstasy, but they may not be in ecstasy. I'm not criticizing everyone, but some people may just be experiencing, you know, something illusory. Hmm. Like that, you know, that Vatsasura who appeared to be a coward boy. Or calf, actually, calf. He appeared to be a calf. Who is the coward boy demon? Palumbasura. Yeah, so he appeared to be a coward boy, and Vatsasura appeared to be a calf. And Ristasura appeared to be a bull. But they weren't. They were just demons. Or Putana appeared to be a very sweet lady. But she was just a demoness. So there's illusion there. You know, illusion, Maya is very, very tricky. Therefore, in order to overcome Maya, we have to have a strong intelligence which surpasses the mind. You know, the mind will be attracted or repulsed by different things, but if we keep the intelligence strong, then we can actually use our sense of discrimination to keep us off of the mental platform or the sentimental platform. Does that make sense? Okay, any other quick questions? Yeah.
On that same question, as far as the initiation goes, what is the reason it might be?
Yeah.
So how does this statement fit when Srila Prabhupada says the Guru is one?
Guru is one because he's representing the Krishna in the disciplic succession. I mean, I give the example sometimes of the PowerPoints. The PowerPoints are all connected to the powerhouse. But if the PowerPoint becomes disconnected, you take your computer and you plug it in somewhere else.
So it doesn't mean the same person?
No, it's not the same person. You can't just like substitute like that. The Guru is not one in that sense. It's like the same thing that Chinchabeda Veda Tattva philosophy, one and different simultaneously. It is one, but also different simultaneously. A different personality, and we're connected with a specific personality. Or otherwise, you fall into the trap of impersonalism. Guru is one, Guru is Krishna, and so, you know, it doesn't matter. You can worship the Guru or worship Krishna or whatever. You know, that's a big trap. So therefore, yeah, I mean, sometimes reinitiation is necessary for the spiritualized, and you know, we've seen that in many cases. We've seen that's necessary. But not if someone is a Vaishnava, you don't initiate or reinitiate their disciples. That's actually a great offense. It's a violation of Vaishnava etiquette. And Maryada Vyatikrama, it's stated in the Bhagavatam by Prabhupada, one who commits that offense of violation will never achieve Krishna's mercy. So,
one of the things devotees don't understand in Krishna's sense and Bhagavad Gita that even in the path of devotion, if someone makes a mistake, he may be a guru or something, but if he's still on the path of devotion, Krishna doesn't worry about it. So what we do, we tend to look into those things
and
create a big...
A big thing, yeah.
Worry about that guru has done that or this. I mean, anyone can make a mistake by this path.
Yeah, like the perfection of the guru is not a material perfection. Even someone like Prabhupada, I mean, it's not a material perfection. Let's say you're in the car with Prabhupada and Prabhupada said makes it make a right turn and you know it's supposed to be left. Does that mean you lose faith in Prabhupada? Or if Prabhupada's English wasn't correct in his original Bhagavatams? Or Prabhupada didn't spell something the right way? I mean, or Prabhupada didn't know how to fix your car? Or use a computer or something like that. I mean, these things, it's not a material perfection. See, there was some propaganda from some other organization that the guru is omniscient. But he's not omniscient. He's connected with Krishna. He knows what Krishna wants him to know. But he doesn't know everything like Krishna. Because that's impersonalism. To say the guru is omniscient just like Krishna, knows past, present, and future just like Krishna, is just impersonalism. Because he's a jiva soul, unless your guru is Krishna. He's a jiva soul. So therefore, you can't have unlimited knowledge as a jiva soul, but you can be connected to the unlimited. Hmm. So just, I mean, to, just like the there was one other organization that criticized ISKCON, but they kept saying that their guru was omniscient. And they also said Prabhupada's omniscient, but all these other ISKCON rascal gurus are not omniscient. And even they made this explanation that, you know, there were so many problems in our Gurukula before in ISKCON. So they made this explanation that Prabhupada knew that there would be problems in the Gurukula, there would be child abuse and everything like that. But he went ahead and did it anyway because he understood that was the karma of the people going to the Gurukula. Huh? You know, so it portrays Prabhupada as someone, you know, very callous. You know, by allowing something to happen. But obviously Prabhupada wasn't aware of some of the problems that were going on in ISKCON. You know, people think Prabhupada was aware of every single thing in ISKCON. ISKCON is a manifestation of Prabhupada's devotion, but it's not equal to Prabhupada. So when Prabhupada was on the planet, there were a lot of things going on that Prabhupada was not aware of. They didn't tell Prabhupada. I mean, I could tell you so many things, like Guru Kripa's activities in Japan, how he was raising money. Prabhupada wasn't informed about that. And later on, when he heard about it, he said, you know, that should not go on. So we shouldn't think that the spiritual master is omniscient. You know, if he was omniscient, he wouldn't need email. Right? He could just communicate with you by telepathy. You know, isn't it? He calls you on the phone. I heard you're in Maya. How did you hear? I had a dream. You're in Maya. So, but the guru's perfection is sticking to the orders of his spiritual master and also being connected to Krishna, completely devoted to Krishna without any ulterior motive. That's the perfection. That's the perfection we're looking for, the purity we're looking for, not some magical trick. But people are very, very much attracted to either magical tricks or dramatic performances. That's why our Bhagavad Saptahas are so popular. You know, the type of Bhagavad Saptahas where the person giving the Saptaha says something, then he breaks into song. It's like a Bollywood movie, basically. It says, oh, Govinda, Govinda, Govinda. And all the ladies who all sit in front. You know, the men are in the back talking business anyway. But and the ladies go, Govinda, Govinda. I just did some marriages in Fiji. And I look around, there's all women there. I said, what happened to the men? Because men get bored with marriages. The men were all outside, you know, talking about God knows what, you know, politics or sporting activities or something like that. And the women were all there. Oh, it's so nice. Love. Who was given love? And to whom? You know that statement in the marriage. You ever seen a marriage? Would they do that? The man touches the lady's heart and says, who is given love? And to whom? And all the women are going, ah. And all the men are going, how boring. You see the difference in the male psychology and the woman's psychology.
A really good example was when Prabhupada disappeared. I mean, a lot of senior devotees, Prabhupada went to Narayan Maharaj for guidance, but when they realized that he was going against Islam, they came back. So there wasn't anything wrong.
Yeah. There wasn't anything wrong. I mean, to go to the Guru's godbrothers for guidance is one thing. There's no problem with that. However, Prabhupada did give us injunctions about that. But when you find that the guidance the Guru's godbrother has given is interfering with your own shraddha, with your own faith, you should be intelligent enough to say, you know, that's it. You know, even if the other person is giving you all this nectar stuff to do at the same time, you're saying, well, the shraddha, the faith is the most important thing. Without faith, ashradana purusha dharamashasha parantapa aprapyamam nivartante mrityu samsara vartmani. Without faith, Krishna says in the Gita, then you have to get repeated birth and death in the material world, dharamashasha, faith in Krishna, faith in the spiritual master. So everything's based on faith. That's why if you read the Sharirakya Bhasha, the commentary by Shankaracharya on the Vedanta Sutra, it destroys your faith. And even a high-class Vaishnava can fall down by reading that. So, I think we have to end now. We have programs today, right? Okay, we have people on the internet watching us. That's it. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Let's see, Auckland.
From
Anand. It's a nice name. Bliss.
So this friend is leaving today for India, but he'll be staying for another couple of days.
You're going to Pune or?
Yeah, my family is going to Pune.
Good.
I'll be in New York for about a couple of more months.
In a couple more months, yeah. You're staying? Good, nice to meet you.
So basically, he'll be with us, traveling with you along.
So oh, good, yeah.
Monday. So he flies back.
Yeah, well, a devotee from our temple. Maybe you have you been in Pune in a while? Were you there recently or no?
I was there recently, in November.
When did you come to New Zealand?
2 years back.
3 years back.
But he just visited Pune last year. Mm. When we were in India, he was also there.
Oh, that's good.
So he was with this.
Yeah, so you would have seen this devotee. You were there, so. That's nice you're going there. Yeah, it's much nicer there for the children.
Yeah,
this is the best place for children is in Pune and India. I mean, the West, there's so much other influence. Children can be influenced by the culture here. It's not very nice. Of course, in Mumbai, there's a lot of bad influence, too. It's everywhere. As long as people go on the internet and everything's finished.
So we'll be just heading home and get the family served.
Okay, that's good. Where are we going for breakfast? I don't have the list with me. Oh, we're going to Bhagavati's house?
Yeah.
Okay. Does anyone have an extra copy of the list so I can... That's the most recent one? Where's Krishna Kirtan? What about Tuesday? Yeah, you're here. Breakfast.
Yes. Maharaj, apologies couldn't come yesterday because one of we lost 3 family members.
Oh my God!
In 3 weeks time. So I'm
which family members did you lose?
My brothers. Yeah.
You lost your brothers?
Not extended
family. Oh, extended family.
Yeah. So yesterday too, I'm going to the funeral.
Oh my God. Okay. So we'll see you later then.
Okay.
Yeah, chant. Make sure you chant the holy names at the funeral. That will help people. You can chant Hare Krishna for the people. Okay, we'll see you later. Breakfast. All right. Oh, Krishna. Okay, we got to take care of the deities in a second. You're all set up?
Yes, Guru Maharaj.
Thank you, Guru Maharaj. Doing all right? Ready to go? See, everything all right? Good. You're staying here now, or are you going to move to... what? You're going to stay... I know you're here now, but... You're staying. Good. All right, so things have calmed down. Good. Happy to hear that. Okay. Brought your bicycle here this morning? we can go bicycling. After I do the deities, we can go bicycling.